Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we had some Bay Hill drama where the leaderboard ended up going in reverse, unlike its typical movement on Sunday on tour. Plus our friend Phil taking one more L to Tiger. We get into that. I'm tuned into the Amish, and Mike's tuned into a new series on HBO Max. And this week's guest, Epson Tour Pro Erica Nager. Really cool talk with a professional who's navigating the waters of travel and life on tour and a whole lot more. Plus my McDonald's beef has somewhat of a resolution, you could call it, but I'm evolving with the times and I'm trying to become a more modern man, plus eclectic cuisine when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Club Doctor Golf, the number one golf club care solution. They've got two great products, soon to be three, coming your way, and they all have the one responsibility of making sure your club faces are clean and shiny to give you that improved club performance, ball spin, speed, control, and just a little bit more confidence over every single shot. So check out Club Doctor Golf and clubdoctorgolf.com, and you can check out exactly what the products do. I use the spray really easily every time I go to the range. It's 3 to 4 extra seconds between balls that gives you those clean clubs that you need for your golf game. So again, go to clubdoctorgolf.com, use code COL for 15% off any purchase at clubdoctorgolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Snacks, Club Doctor Golf, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was a firecracker, lightning strike, crazy kind of weekend at Bay Hill for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. It felt like a major, especially on Sunday. Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland looked like they were going to battle it out all weekend. And on Sunday, it turned into who could actually play even par golf.
Yeah, and it was just the survival of the fittest, right?
Yeah. And so what ended up happening is that now, after what I said a few weeks ago, thinking that this guy had actually won on tour a couple times and he hadn't, Scottie Scheffler is now a 2-time winner on the PGA Tour. It is shaping up to be his year as he claims the Arnold Palmer Invitational and just played great golf on Sunday, actually played, you know, under par, right, on Sunday to take the W there. So, you know, I ask a question like this every week. Scottie Scheffler, over under 2 majors this year.
Oh, the over under 2 majors. Oh, okay. I'm still going under on 2 majors. I haven't seen that many major championship performances from him outside of one at Augusta that have me thinking he'll contend on that scale. But what I will say is maybe 2 more wins coming his way in the 2022 calendar. At least he's off to a great start. He had great mojo at last year's match play, which is going to be here in Austin in a few weeks. So no saying he can't make a run there. This was an interesting one because he just kind of, you know, played his way up the leaderboard. Didn't necessarily have that moment where you said to yourself, that was the winning putt. But nonetheless, he outlasted the field on a really tough, gutsy day. And he was the last one standing. And lo and behold, he lifted another trophy. So yeah, it's while the majors, I think, is a little bit improbable, it's not crazy to say that he could keep doing this a couple more times this year.
Yeah, arguably this was a boring win for him because he didn't do anything super fantastic or amazing. He just played good, solid golf and didn't fall away when everyone else did fall away.
And that usually doesn't get it done, but it did this week.
Yeah, so. And that though is the kind of golf you need to play to win a major. And that's why I think about that to a certain extent, because like you had guys at the top of this leaderboard who shouldn't have fallen away, like Victor Hovland, like Rory McIlroy, who I thought I was going to be able to get a winner this week after not having it the last couple weeks and being real close as we've been. And all these other guys just kind of fell away. Billy Horschel had a chance for a while and fell away. And so it's, you know, you win majors by just not falling apart. And
that's true. You know. The adage of just don't lose it. Like, you don't necessarily need to win it every time. Just if you just don't lose it, then you might give yourself a chance. And I think that's what happened here with Scheffler. So, yeah, maybe a guy to keep on the U.S. Open radar come June when it really is a grind at Brookline Country Club in Massachusetts. So I will definitely file that in the back pocket. But shout out to Scotty Scheffler, the UT Longhorn, for getting done for the second time on tour.
It was indeed. South of the guys in Florida were all those other guys that, you know, just needed a chance to play at the Puerto Rico Open. And this was just a fantastic feel-good story that came out of here, because on a medical exemption, needed to win to keep his status, needed to do something to keep his status. And Ryan Brem, I'm going to mispronounce his name like I always do.
You got it.
Ryan Brem. Was able to do a huge win, really won pretty handily as well, it looked like there. Gets two-year exemption on tour now, gets to keep his card, gets to play in the Players' Championship this weekend, all doing this after losing his father as well, right? And just an amazing story here.
like a movie script, you just rolled that out there. And it was, because this was literally his last shot. Essentially, that medical extension and exemption means, you know, that's the PGA Tour doing these pros a solid who missed an extended period of time due to injury and saying, we'll let you make it up on the back end. We're going to give you X amount of tournaments to make the amount of money that the guys on tour did last season. And if you can eclipse that mark, then yes, you belong out here on the tour and you can keep your card. This was his last week to get it done. He knew going into this tournament, Mike, that he had to finish solo second or better to keep his card. He knew that going into the tournament. And lo and behold, not only does he wins in runaway fashion to secure the place he's playing for the next few years. If that's not clutch, I don't know what is. It's that classic, you know, like when your back's absolutely up against the wall, what do you got? Well, Brem proved he's got it for sure.
Yeah, it was just, again, movie script played out for us in Puerto Rico with him. Really and cool. Once again, the PGA Tour is just stealing all the thunder from Monday Q and the stories that he brings us.
They are. They're biting a lot of his content right now. But yeah, everyone's wondering on Twitter, when is Ryan, aka Mr. Monday Q, going to give the block to the PGA Tour Twitter account? that would be quite a statement right there. A political statement, if there ever was one on golf Twitter. So I'll be watching for that. But finding a lot of inspiration from his stories. And this is another great one. A guy that's just been an absolute grinder forever, finally getting it done when he absolutely needed to.
You know, there was a really interesting headline that came out this week as well, considering that the two involved haven't hit a shot on tour in a few weeks here. And that's that Tiger Woods beat Phil Mickelson.
Wait, but I'm confused. I thought Phil not only won the PIP, but he announced it and declared it, right?
Yeah, he did. Well, you know, Phil likes to be a big promoter. He likes to market himself and his brand, and he does a great job of that for sure. And he likes to toot his own horn. But ultimately, Tiger Woods, I thought, shared a fantastic tweet to just be kind of like, oops, sorry.
He gave the whoopsie daisies to Phil Mickelson. Like, how great is that? What an unbelievable strut from Tiger, finding out he actually won the PIP, which is the money bonus for how positively you're influencing the game through media, social media, ratings, everything, Q score. It turns out Tiger ended up beating Phil. Interesting scenario there. You know, Phil was a guy who came out immediately and says he won something, but it turns out that he actually didn't win something. I can't remember where I've seen that before. But it sounds vaguely familiar, something that's happened in my life. But it was an interesting turn of events, to say the least. More egg on Phil's face. Mike, I thought this was the end of the trounce on Phil parade over the last couple weeks, but this is just one more pile on top of him, on top of everything that's gone down, losing the PIP. A very tough look for him at this moment.
Yeah, you know, I think a great opportunity that Phil needs to do here is go headline his own golf tour, that he can just kind of, you know, do something like that. I think that might be good for him, don't you think?
Yeah, just speed up on some geriatrics and some over the hill tour pros that'll take a check. Sounds like a great plan indeed. So yeah, Phil taking that loss to Tiger. One other thing that also came, if you're on Twitter and you're following, I know you appreciate this. I also caught wind of the Charlie Woods parody golf account on Twitter. Shout out to that account, by the way, for having some great jokes at Phil's expense when this headline came out.
That's right. If you're not following the Charlie Woods parody account, you definitely should. It's right, easily one of the best parodies out there now. Let's talk about what we all woke up to on Sunday morning before we saw everything that happened Sunday during the day at the Old Palmer. And this was on the LPGA Tour, where in this out in Singapore there, Jin Young Ko won in her season debut in Singapore. This was her sixth win in 10 starts.
That's ridiculous.
And she had a final round 66, which gave her the LPGA Tour's all-time record for most consecutive rounds in the 60s, 15 rounds in the 60s in a row, and her most consecutive sub-par rounds of 30 rounds under par. In a row.
That's not, you just dropped like five stats in there that were all more impressive than the prior one. I don't know what it is with the LPGA and producing these gaudy statistical figures recently, but the numbers are just through the roof in terms of just LPGA gaudy stats. They've been coming out left and right from that team there. And shout out to Jin Young Ko for the dominance. I don't know. Is it the 50 rounds in the 60s or is it the 30 rounds under par? They're both just equally as ridiculous in my mind.
I mean, they're both ridiculous. I mean, you know, Tiger Woods has not done that.
That's a nice comparison. There you go.
I think what this tells me too, and this is what I'm looking forward to, there's always, people always say that the women golfers aren't as good or whatever, and that, you know, you put the guys who think they could face off against a woman golfer on her worst day and they're on their best day and they beat them. And it's like, no, you can't. But what I think is great from all of this and the stats that are coming out and the proliferation of women's golf that we're seeing is that they're going to start playing some of the courses that the men play. And I can't wait to see them tear up those courses.
I appreciate that. Maybe a little bit of a spite move by the women's golf tournament organizers. Not only are we going to prove you guys, you trolls, wrong on the internet, we're going to go to all these courses you love and talk about that you see on the PGA Tour, and we're going to wreck those courses too, right in your face. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to see them go to Pebble and just have all of them shoot like 59. That would just be hilarious.
Like us on Tiger Woods PGA Tour 05, right, in the dorm room?
Exactly. Exactly. Just like that.
Yeah, that was a funny storyline and the funny tweet that came from that. Again, follow us on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1 and you're at MWRINC for our daily musings. But the storyline that came from this is reading these Jin Young Ko stats, what it would actually take for one of us, we're just regular old amateurs here, to shoot, let's say, 30 rounds in a row under par on a golf course. Mike, I came up with a pretty good list of things that I would need. What's on your list of things you're going to need in order to do an under par round 30 times in a row? Is this coming from someone who I don't believe has shot one in his life, right?
No, I've my best score on 18 holes is an 89. I did it once.
All right, so what are your course conditions you need to shoot 30 rounds in a row under par? I think it's going to have to be a pretty short course. Am I right?
So I'm going to need a mini golf course that's flat. Let each hole is only about 6 inches.
Yeah, it happens only. Just in case, because you actually might miss a couple of those to happen. So just in case,
I'm going to need a brick wall behind you,
so you can't be too far away for the comeback part, right?
I'm going to need everything to be a gimme. So.
Yes, I was listing things off and I said, I'm about a 6-7 handicap. I shoot in the 70s and 80s, but still, I need a course under 5,000 yards. I can't have any par three over 125. I need wedges for all the par threes. I need wedges in all the par fours. I got to get to every par five and two. Like, these are all the things I would need to have any sort of streak like this for under par rounds. And who am I kidding? I still would never do it 30 times in a row anyway.
Have you ever shot in the 60s?
Never in the 60s. A one under par 70 is my career best on a par 71 course. Never in the 60s.
So you smelled it, but you've never tasted it.
I did. So for me to even think I could do it 30 times in a row is actually kind of ridiculous. Yeah. The great reply I got on Twitter is we definitely would not need a beer cart. That would not help my goal of shooting 30 under par rounds in a row. Ridiculous stats all around the LPGA Tour.
Just to make it even more impressive to me is that we're doing it in a professional setting. over the course
of... this isn't just one Saturday round with the boys, right? And
we're playing, you know, those four rounds in a row. So this isn't just like we play a round this week and a round next week and, you know, no. That, you know, let's contextualize this as well. So
it's just rounds in a row. Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable Crazy. Stuff from Jin Young Ko in the LPGA Tour.
It's just fantastic. Let's turn our attention to this weekend, because if the Arnold Palmer Invitational is any indication, this week's Players Championship should be just balls to the wall crazy, really.
It should be, right? I mean, I don't know where I sit on that. I feel like there's been a little bit of a waning in like kind of the sex appeal of Sawgrass and the Players Championship for golf fans over the years. I still gobble it up every single year. I don't know about you. The stretch and the finish of 16, the par five that loops around the water to 17, obviously the Island Green par three, and that unbelievable finish at 18 with water all the way left. I think that's one of the most iconic finishes on tour. I eat that up every time. I feel like a little bit of the internet just as love to complain, and they're kind of waning on their interest towards the Players, but this finish always gets me going every year.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing quite like 17 on Sunday at the Players. There's really not. So the question is, who in this field, which obviously is loaded, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Hideki Matsuyama, Victor Hovland,
it's world class. So I mean, this is the perfect run up for me. You know, I'm salivating now because all the world's best, they play the Players. They take the Valspar off next week. They come to the match play and see me in Austin. They take the week after that, and then it's Masters week, just like that.
That's right. Sure. That's right. So out of all the guys that are playing this week, give me your hot take on a Monday evening that we're recording this. Who's going to win the Players?
Well, I'm going to pick about five or six guys from my Twitter card and throw it up on Wednesday evening. A guy that I think is due for a win, and I say this kind of laughingly because, like, yes, he's winning in and he's appearing on lots of leaderboards, but he's really not lifting trophies the way his game has been matching recently, is I think I'm going to be betting John Rahm as one of the outright favorites this week. I don't usually go that high up in the card, but I actually have a very, very strong emotional will towards Rahm and his performance this week. I think he's due for a big performance. I think his putting has been coming around a lot on fast greens recently, which is going to be a test here. The greens get pretty slippery, pretty brown and crusty by the end of the weekend. So that's going to be tough for him. But if the putts are going in, the attitude's in check, he's the guy to beat for me this weekend.
I'm going to throw out one more name. Also at the top of the odds here, of course. He was my guy this past week. You got to think that he's looking for revenge after what just happened. Rory McIlroy. You got to think he's won here before.
Yep. Just did a few years ago. Yeah.
Yep. So
JT could be on the card. Again, I like a lot of guys at the top. I don't know. I'm typically not super elitist with my picks, but I'm going to be a little chalky, AKA, you know, picking the chalk, picking the favorites, the guys that you know are going to be there. Those are going to be on my card, but I'll throw a few sleepers in, you know, maybe a little Dylan Fratelli action, a little Sheamus Power action. You know, I love betting on my man Sheamus. Maybe Kevin and Oz going off at 100-1. Check out those picks on Twitter. Again, I'm at Course of Life 1 and you're at MWRINC.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share where we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. This is a really busy TV show release week, just kind of in general.
There is a lot out right now.
Yeah. There is a lot out right now. There are two shows. I'm going to share two shows that I watched this week.
Okay.
We're going to start with one that started season two this week, and that was, I'm going to nerd out a little bit, Picard season two came out this week. So all you Star Trek fans, Picard season two came out.
Okay. Trekkies unite. All right. I like
that. Q is in it. And that's all you need to know is that Q is back. And for those of you that know, you know. The other one for all of you who maybe aren't Star Trek nerds, and that's okay, is Our Flag Means Death, which came out on HBO Max. It's the new show by Taika Waititi also the director of What We Do in the Shadows, or the creator of What We Do in the Shadows, director of Thor Ragnarok and the new Thor movie that's going to be coming out as well.
You're a Taika Waititi fanboy at this point,
huge,
I think.
Huge. I am. I was a Taika Waititi fanboy before everyone knew who Taika Waititi was.
Okay? Oh, yes, you're that hipster standing in the corner of the bar as the band's playing the sold-out show saying, you know, I saw them in the back of this bar a few years ago, you know, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Our Flag Means Death is about a gentleman pirate.
Gentleman pirate.
And three episodes dropped on Friday on HBO Max. And I think they'll have new ones coming out every week. 30-minute comedy. Check it out.
Nice. Yeah, my random one that just came out is it's been out for a bit, but I'm into How I Met Your Father. And they're dropping a few episodes at a time as well. The How I Met Your Mother spinoff. It's okay. Not quite the same as the OG. But the weird thing that I'm tuned into, which I think you'll be very fascinated by, I've been going down some YouTube wormholes during the day here. And the one I've gotten caught up into recently is just learning and watching the Amish people. Mike, what are your thoughts on the Amish?
What the Amish do when they're like between the 16, 17 years old puts all the college parties to shame.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You're referring to the Rumspringa, the moment when the Amish people get the opportunity to leave and go out into the English world and just have one crazy bender and see what it's like out there. That definitely is profiled in the videos.
You really simplified what happens during that time.
Yes. Yeah, they're a fascinating bunch. There's a lot of cool YouTube content of creators that have gone to Amish country and like lived a day or two in the life. And I've watched a lot of conversations with them. Here's the parts I thought that were very unique. The phone, Mike, they are just coming around on cell phones right now, like just now in 2022. However, they've got very strict packs. A lot of the old order Amish don't like using a lot of their phone. So they'll only use it for calls, texts, and the map. That's it. No apps allowed in the Amish community, it sounds like.
So are we using Blackberries then? Is that
what we're using? Some of them have flip phones, and they were very braggadocious about that. Yeah. They love showing off their flip phones. They just think they're the cat's meow with those.
Take it from these two kids that were around in the 90s and 2000s when these phones were big. There's nothing quite like a Moto Razor or something. You know.
Yes, indeed. And the other funny thing I love watching is when these Amish go out into society, like you mentioned, and they see something in the English world, they go to an English quote unquote supermarket. And the thing that they could not get over, Mike, is that you can just buy vegetables that are pre-cut and washed and ready to eat. They thought that was the absolute laziest thing in the world. And you know what? I think that they're right. It just might be, but that's not stopping me from buying the mini carrots anyway.
Yeah, we're a lazy bunch of people, humans in general. We are.
They were flabbergasted that there were just pre-cut, peeled, washed vegetables. They could not get over that and did not understand why that belonged in a store. But that's the YouTube wormhole I've been down recently. So I'll check back with more updates from the Amish people.
Let's get into this week's guest. Alex, we've really gone through the entire gamut of interviews that you did at the PGA show down there in Orlando. What was that, like 6-7 months ago? It feels like forever ago at this point. Yeah. This week's guest was someone you met at the show.
Yes.
And then was able to set up a time to actually chat with them.
Correct. Isn't that amazing that you can actually just meet a human being in real life and just, you know, set up an interview with them that way? I don't do much of it, but it was good to connect with Eric. And I saw her at the booth. We got to talking about the podcast and she says, "Oh, well, I play on tour. You should interview me." I'm like, "Yes, I should." And so that leads us to this week's guest, Erica Nager.
That's right. We'll get into that conversation with Erica in just a moment. But first, Alex, our friends at Volvic dropped something pretty exciting this week.
Yeah. I saw you posted on our Instagram at COL podcast, the new release, the fancy new Vivid we've been talking about, right?
Yeah. All the colors in one box, which is like, why? I'm sorry, Volvic, why haven't you done this sooner? Why haven't you put all the colors in one box?
The array of colors in the rainbow. The thought process for me is I like the Volvic yellow, but when you've got every color, you can just kind of match the ball with the outfit. And like, that's really the vibe that I'm going for these days.
There you go. There you go. And what's great, of course, is that the Volvic ball is a good ball with color. it's not just, you know, some crappy mall that just got some color on it, like you would think about.
Yeah, as proven by me, above average golfer. It works, and yeah. I play it. So there you go. That's all you need to know.
And I'd like to say it's proven by me, average golfer.
Yeah. That's the best of both worlds, right? I don't know,
but it feels like I'm playing better with it, and that's all that really matters. So you can head on over to the Volvix website. It's VOLVIK.com. Check out the Vivid. So many colors now in one box. You can also check out the XT Soft, also a fantastic ball. They've got other merchandise, towels, accessories for the course, some cool collectibles as well. They got Marvel golf balls. If you really want to nerd out, you can do that as well. They got great gifts for any golfer in your life of any age. Volvic, they got a ball for every swing, and they have performance in color. Volvic.com.
Next up on the tee, joining us from sunny Florida, we have a pro golfer currently playing on the newly renamed Epson Tour. She's a Stetson U grad that I got the chance to meet with at the PGA show in Orlando. We have Erica Nager joining the Course of Life. Erica, how's everything going today?
Hi, it's going great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It was great to connect and meet with you at the PGA show. You were there at the Golo Golf booth, and I got to see all sorts of really cool companies and brands that were there. For yourself, I know you spend a lot of time in Orlando, but what was the highlight of your PGA show week?
So this was actually my first PGA show, and I think the highlight was just seeing how many like smaller companies are interested in golf and the industry, and there's so many new products to try, so many innovative ideas. I was with Golo Golf during the week, and it's just a smaller golf accessories company. We make really cool patterns on golf gloves, hoodies, hats, things like that. So I work with them, and I use their products, and it was just really cool. A lot of creativity out there.
There was. And I feel like there was a lot of swagger with the golf fashion this year. I don't know if it's because it was my first show too, but I know Golo does a lot of cool patterns. But I just talk to me about just like character on the golf course when it comes to fashion, because I feel like we're kind of coming into a new realm now with golf fashion.
So it's really exciting to see that like golf is becoming like really like a cool sport. You know, you see like football, basketball has always had that level of swag, but now you see like a younger group bringing fashion and style into golf. And it's really cool to see. And me myself, I love, you know, making my like outfit and accessories uniquely me. So I have a lot of lightning bolts. I like Pokemon. I like to incorporate that into my head covers and things like that. And I mark my balls with lightning bolts. It just kind of gives you a personality out there.
That's awesome. Shout out to Pikachu and Raichu.
Always fun. Yeah, there you go. I got to keep it Pikachu, but sometimes I can throw Raichu out there.
Love that. I'm curious, Erica, when you're growing up, was it always golf for you, or were there other sports that you played competitively growing up?
No. So I was a dancer for a while.
Interesting.
I did ballet and all of that. Yeah. And my brother, I have a younger brother, he's 4 years younger than me. He started playing golf when he was like 3. And he was this little child prodigy, and he was getting all the attention. And that didn't really sit right with me. So I started to play with him. And then we just became this brother-sister golf duo, and it's still the same. He's actually just turned professional as well. He's on some smaller tours. And it's something that we kind of do together, and I'm really thankful for him. And it just makes it that much more fun to have basically like always a competitor with me.
Yeah, and I bet a rival. I'm imagining there must have been a moment. Yeah. There must have been a moment where you maybe clipped him, or maybe that moment when you first clipped him on the golf course. Do you remember what that was like?
Oh yeah, it just felt like pure money. There's really not a feeling that can compare, you know, finally like overtaking somebody that's been beating up on you for such a long time. And I love the kid to death, but we butt heads on the course for sure.
Love that. So the brotherly, sisterly rivalry fully in place. And I think it probably helped you grow game growing up for sure. One thing I found interesting about your career is you had a difficult decision heading into college and where you wanted to play. You ended up choosing Stetson University over lots of different Florida schools as well. UF, Florida State, UCF. What went into making that decision to play at Stetson specifically?
Well, the recruiting process as a whole is very intimidating, and it doesn't often a lot of girls kind of get left behind because there's just so much behind the scenes talking and things aren't really spelled out for you. So there was opportunities that I missed out on just because I didn't know. I wasn't really sure what to do or who to talk to. But Stetson ended up reaching out to me, and I was very fortunate. It was close to my house, and it's a great, beautiful school. So that was kind of all I needed to hear. My main goal at the time was to get a golf scholarship, and ended up signing when I was a senior. And it ended up working out, and I got to visit home all the time, and I got to play all over. And I had an overall good experience at Stetson.
Definitely. Yeah. And lots of accolades to your name as well, too, and your time there. What I found interesting was the timing of your collegiate career was very interesting. You were in a precarious position that lots of other college athletes were talking specifically about the spring of 2020. You know, you had the plan that lots of athletes did to graduate, you know, finish out the final season, go to Q school, and then the world stopped, COVID happened, and everything changed. Talk to me about how that kind of affected your plans for the end of your career.
I was obviously very nervous about graduating and turning pro because it was kind of like my goal the whole time is kind of coming up quickly, and it's all really happening. So my college career ended, my last tournament, I think it actually ended perfectly. My last tournament was in Hawaii right before everything shut down. So I wasn't too upset. And then we were in quarantine for a while, and then in June, I just decided to turn pro. I was like, okay, I'm pro. And I just signed up for a mini tour event as a professional. And it all felt very weird and scary and intimidating. And then, of course, a lot of the LPGA players were playing in these smaller tours at the time because there was nothing else to play in. So my first event was actually, I was actually like hitting balls on the range next to Christina Kim. And I was like, oh my gosh. I just felt like I just dove headfirst into it, after I played, I loved it, and I haven't stopped since, and it's been wonderful. I've had so much fun, learned so much in this year, and I just can't wait for just to continue to move up.
That's awesome. That Christina Kim moment, a very neat one. She's a legend in the game in her own right. So really cool initiation for you as a pro. Tell me a little bit about what's now newly renamed the Epson Tour. Lots of fans know it previously as the Symetra Tour, where you're playing now. They've come on as a new sponsor and had a lot of good announcements, it sounds like, for the betterment, with expanded purses, smaller entry fees. Now, as a player, when you heard about this announcement specifically for the new Epson Tour, what was your reaction?
Oh, obviously super excited. Women's golf is growing really quickly. There's more money, there's more fans, there's more just overall interest. And I think that this is a big turning point for women's golf. I think it's going to be hopefully as big as the men's tour. And, you know, we're seeing big steps being taken to get to that point. And there's more and more competitors, stronger competitions, and it's just really, really amazing to watch.
It is. And you know, my comparison too is I want to see the Epson Tour, you know, become what the Korn Ferry Tour is now and be that true feeder that gets a real spotlight and presents those opportunities, because that's what it's all about in the end, is the opportunities. So hopefully some of those come your way. Let's talk a little bit about your golf game specifically. I've seen some stuff on your Instagram and social media that you are definitely of the analogy to tee it high and let it fly. Or have you always been like that and played aggressively on the golf course, or is it situational?
So I think I've always been a very aggressive player. I've always kind kind of used my power as an advantage. More recently, I've kind of tried to like kind of reel it back a little bit, you know, use more strategy, because, you know, I can't go all gung-ho on the ball and, you know, I end up getting in trouble. So, but I would say I am more of an aggressive player, yeah.
Nice. So when we talked briefly at the PGA show, you mentioned your status on the Epson Tour is conditional. So explain to people at home kind of what that means for you know, not as in tune golf fans. Understand what conditional status means, how many events that gets you, and what, you know, what type of finishes or golf do you need to elevate that status?
So you play Q. So there's a Q school in August, and people sign up to play that, and it's depending on where you finish is whether you continue to move on or you have what I had, what I received was conditional status. And it's, you're a member of the Epson Tour, and there is opportunities to get sponsors exemptions into the schedule, or you're just like, you're on like a waiting list. So if players don't play, drop out, you kind of move up that list, hopefully to get a spot in the event. And then in combination with that, I'm playing another tour called the All Pro Tour, or Women's All Pro Tour. And if you have a top finish on that tour, you get automatically exempt into next week's Epson event. So it's mainly just playing well in events, getting exemptions, and just kind of week by week, just inching your way up.
Nice. So let's talk about the week by week and how that works specifically for you. You know, if you know you're in an event, do you typically, are you driving, or are you flying? What's the mix of travel for you with tournament golf?
Okay, so I am actually starting on the All Pro Tour in 2 weeks, and it starts in Louisiana. So I'm going to drive there.
Nice.
And then usually I will leave my car somewhere in Texas and then kind of just like use that as a home base. So usually Dallas. So I'll probably, after the 2 weeks in Louisiana, I'll go to Dallas, leave my car there, and then fly back, and then fly back to Texas when it's time to keep going. It's like a week off or something like that. But yeah, it's, you really got to learn how to travel well, what to do, meet people, leave your car somewhere, fly back from here, where's your bag? It's all things that I've learned in my first year, and you don't even think about it. There's so much more than just golf to learn when you're on tour full time.
Yeah. The hub for your car is an interesting thought. I didn't think about parking it in Dallas in a nice central location, but yeah, it does kind of logistically make sense. If you ever need a driveway and if you ever need a driveway in Austin, Texas, let me know. I'll be glad to host your car as well.
Wonderful. Cause I probably will, you know, and it's nice too, cause versus two checked bags versus a whole car full of stuff, you know, me being a high maintenance girl, it makes a huge difference.
Nice. So now I'm curious about the other side of it and events where maybe you're on the bubble or a low alternate or something like that. I've heard about these stories from different Korn Ferry Tour pros, like Mark Baldwin, for example, told me a story about driving all the way through the Louisiana Bayou of the night because he was the third alternate and he got to the first alternate, but he never got a spot in the field come Thursday evening.
Right.
What are those have those experiences been like for you? And have you had any similar stories at all?
Yeah, I've had similar experiences where I'm like just on, like, I don't know if I'm going to get in or if I don't know, like, if I'm going to make the cut and I need to go to another event or something like that. You just got to really keep an open mind. You got to be really flexible, especially like with the smaller tours. You just got to be prepared to just get up and go, just make it work whenever possible, because these type of events provide like bigger opportunities and you just want to be ready to show up when you need to.
Yeah, that's a good mentality. The money doesn't sleep, so you're going to have to get yourself there if you want some of it, I guess, right?
Exactly. Oh yeah, I just want to play as much as possible, so I'm ready, and you know, there will be time to sleep. You will have time to rest. So just push right now. Don't give up, and you'll have time to breathe. I
nice. Swear. Very cool. Again, we're joined by Erica Nager, the Epson Tour on Erica Nager, E-R-I-K-A-H-N-E-G-E-R on Instagram. If you want to follow along, she posts some really cool content of her golf and her travels. Specifically,
yep.
I want to ask one question about the school you went to, because I can honestly say I've heard of lots of mascots in my day, but I've never heard of a Hatter. So you got to tell me, what is a Stetson Hatter?
So Hatter is basically a guy. I think it used to be Mad Hatters, but Hatter is a guy that makes Stetson hats. Like, I'm not sure if you know what a Stetson hat. It's like a cowboy hat almost.
Oh, okay.
But it kind of got its name. So like the glue that they used to make the hat had some type of like poison in it that would make people go insane. So that's kind of where the term Mad Hatter came from. And the founder of the school was John B. Stetson, which is the guy that makes the famous Stetson hats. So that's kind of how it came to be.
Love it. You learn something new every day, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm never not the best at explaining it because I'm still a little confused, but I'm a proud Hatter, so.
Love that. One other cool thing that's featured in your content, which I appreciate. I love the little things when I go to cool courses around the country, around the world. The one that you appreciate that I can tell is the on-course statues. I've seen you pose with the snake pit at Innisbrook, the bear at PGA National. I'm curious, what started that, and what's your favorite on-course statue?
Oh, gosh. I do love bear. I'm trying to even think. I got to get one with Payne Stewart at
Pinehurst. Yeah.
I don't have that one yet. But I do think the snake is cool. Like, I think that little pose. I like to take pictures and be an Instagram girl, so. If I see a cool statue, I'm going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's a cool little theme. I encourage you to keep that going. It needs some sort of hashtag attached to it as well. I don't know what that is quite yet, though.
Right. I'll figure it out. I'll find some cool golf statues and make it a thing.
Nice. All right. I'll put you on the spot for the last couple of questions here. It's kind of a random one, but definitely fun to think about. If you could pick one LPGA tour event to get a sponsor's exemption into right now, you know, the next week you're playing in an LPGA event, which one would you pick to play in?
Just next week. Wow. You know, it's crazy. Like, I don't know the names of these events too well, but I would say anywhere in Hawaii, I'm ready to go.
sounds like a great plan. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, let's go to Hawaii. It's probably my favorite place to play golf. So anytime I could get an opportunity there, I'm packing my bags.
What's the coolest course you played on Hawaii? I know we as golf fans regularly see the Champions Tour there. We see Wailea and Kapalua, but what's your favorite course to play on the island?
Right. I've played Kapalua before, but I've played this course. It's actually on a military base. It's called Keone Clipper. And it's actually like the favorite course of a couple of past presidents. And we got to play on it for a tournament in college. And, it's right on the beach. It's like on the tropical side of the island. It's just beautiful. There's all kinds of little animals running around. So I'd have to say that's my favorite course. And if you get a chance to go out there, do it. It's fantastic.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a sucker for on-course wildlife. So I definitely have to check that one out
if I ever get to Hawaii. I'm always the one trying to pet the raccoons that are out there.
Love that. Cool. We love to end with food on a lot of our interviews and podcasts as well, too. So I'm going to end with a couple of random food questions. The first one is, it's late night. You're driving down the highway from one event to the next, and it's like a side of the road rest stop. Like, what's your like go-to order to get on the road while you're going from event to event?
This is actually a good question because I'm starving right now. If I see like a gas station or something, they usually have a Subway in there. I'll go in, get Subway. I'll go get gummy worms, like popcorn, Sprite Zero. I'm just like naming things I'm getting after this practice session.
I can tell you're hungry. Yeah.
I'm so hungry. So yeah, things like that. I've definitely had to pull over in some sketchy places, like middle of Oklahoma. There's nothing there. So I'm always down to try something, but I'd say like, you know, Subway, like basic things like that I'm looking for.
Nice. And we always love to end our interviews with our 19th hole question. It's sponsored by our friends at Lynx Drinks. I'm curious, when you get into the clubhouse, let's say, after a long day of practicing and you get into the 19th hole, what's your go-to like meal and drink to order from there?
I'm a big quesadilla person. So I'm going to be looking for quesadillas and then drink. If I already haven't had one, transfusion or a lime White Claw or High Noon.
Yes, great picks indeed there. I'm sorry, I just provoked your hunger even more with those questions, but I had to ask.
I know, I'm like, oh.
Awesome. Hey, Erica, thank you so much for joining the Course of Life. Appreciated meeting you at the PGA show and looking forward to following your action on the Epson Tour as well, too. Hit them straight, right?
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. This has been fun.
That interview with Erica was brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around the dark spaces of your golf cart, dropping your phone on the seat, or even worse, onto the grass as you drive away. The Phone Caddy keeps you locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round. It'll be the talk of your foursome, and it's a great gift for any golfer in your life. And right now, it's early March. The snow is probably melting where you are. If you're somewhere that has snow, you're starting to think about going out and playing golf again. Now is the time to go get yourself a Phone Caddy so that you are ready to go for this golf season. And if you use our promo code, which is Course of Life, you can save 10% off your Phone Caddy. Comes in a range of colors. You can even show your support with the Patriotic line. So head on over to their website, which is desertfoxgolf.com. Get your Phone Caddy. Use the promo code Course of Life to save 10%. Again, that's promo code Course of Life at desertfoxgolf.com. And we're back. Great chat there with Erica. You know, even though I've never been a Pokemon fan, I do think that's really kind of cool that she is so in on the Lightning Bolt and Pokemon in general to really kind of show her individuality.
That's a legit logo too. I feel like you throw a Lightning Bolt next to like any name or logo, I'm interested, immediately intrigued. So I can get down with the Pikachu vibes on the course. And Erica's a real cool follow as well. And I'm excited to see where her career goes on the Epson Tour. And hopefully we're up on the big tour in no time. But it was great connecting with her. If you liked that conversation or anything else from this episode, be sure to subscribe right now. We'll give you a moment to do it. There's no conversation point that you're missing by just flipping over and clicking that subscribe button. Thank you for tuning in.
Now that we've given you a second to do that, let's talk baseball, Alex. Hey, we're only like 3 weeks away from the regular.
Yeah, this is prime spring training. No palm trees. No palm trees to be seen at all. It's very sad, Mike. We thought there was a glimmer of hope when they extended the deadline last week. Alas, still no deal. Not even a sign of a deal in the immediate future. There's all sorts of things up at hand right now. Now, we can pile on the fact that baseball is not getting this done. They are fumbling the bag. Their season's not going to start on time. That's a mess. But what I do want to talk about is what's coming up in negotiations. Let's get your thoughts on what actually could change the game, because there are some bright spots here that I'm intrigued about that's going on in negotiation. So I'll throw one at you that's to start. We're talking a lot about a pitch clock, Mike, as in we want to put these pitchers on the clock. They've got a certain amount of time to get rid of the ball every single time it comes back to the mound. But what are your thoughts on a pitch clock in baseball?
Stupid. I think it's stupid.
I mean, I'm not a purist, so my first instinct is sure, fire away, but how long is it? And they're debating what length that's going to be right now. So that's one of the many things that's holding up negotiations at the moment.
Yeah, I think the pitch clock is stupid. Yeah, baseball's a chess match. It's all about the chess match. Yes, it takes forever. But if you're not prepared to sit in your seat and take 3 hours to play the seventh inning in the Yankee Red Sox game in the middle of April, then why are you even a baseball fan?
Well, here's the other thought, is shorten the game. Will it ever go to seven innings? They've been experimented with the seven inning double headers in recent years, trying to squeak in things during the COVID seasons. That could be more of, I'm not saying every game is going to be seven innings, but I just feel like the seven inning double header could work into the schedule. That's something I feel like they could end up agreeing on, is just introducing more of those seven inning double headers. I feel like those were actually a success in the last year or two.
Look, they're professionals. They're not college kids here. We play 9-inning games. All right. We don't play 7 innings in Major League Baseball. Don't be that guy, Alex.
Here's the one that I can unanimously agree with you on. This is what I know we agree on is the shift. What they are trying to enact is these hitters are so wah-wah and all in their feelings because they can't go opposite fields and defenses have shifted on them. They're trying to ban the shift altogether. What are they going to do? Put zones where every single player has to stand when the pitch is thrown? This one I think is absolutely ridiculous. You know the way to beat the shift, Mike, is you just hit it where they aren't, you know?
Yeah.
The other way.
it sounds like the players are just unwilling to learn how to be good hitters. You know,
I mean, you literally just slap it down the third baseline. You don't need any power on it. You just hit a ground ball in between third base and second base. It's an automatic single for any lefty against the shift.
This is what I've said for years and years and years is that I hate this obsession with the long ball and with power hitting and with just pulling it and trying to get it over the fence. You don't win ball games by hitting home runs. You win ball games by generating opportunities and getting base hits. That's how you win the game when you're on offense.
Those are some of the things that are at weight right now between the MLB and the players. It's not really looking good for baseball right now. I'm about to swear off April completely. It looks like everyone else is. It seems like April is all but shot in terms of seeing actual baseball. Yeah. So we'll see what the next few weeks hold.
You want my 5 cents here on what I'm thinking about the baseball season?
Oh, this could be gloomy. I'm ready for it.
You know it is because you know I'm the pessimist. We're not getting a baseball season this year.
There it goes.
I don't think it's happening. They are so far apart. And
could you imagine?
The commissioner goes from going like, we're going to lock out the players so we have a season, and then he's not going to have a season. And then the question is, how much longer is he commissioner for?
Oh my God! If Fenway Park sat empty for an entire season, people would roll over and die. Wow! I mean, what a thought that is.
The thing you need to realize is that if you go a whole season in Major League Baseball without any games, it could kill the league. It could destroy the game. Which is already reeling. Wow. It really could. Anyway, let's talk about the end of something else. Let's talk about the end of an era. Let's talk about Coach K.
Yes, that's right.
Ending his career at Duke University in style by losing to UNC.
An all-time awkward TV moment was delivered on Saturday night, Mike. This is 42 years in the making. The legendary Coach K, he's been given the ultimate farewell tour all season long. Students camped out for weeks. The arch rival North Carolina comes into town. Every Duke alumni under the sun, Mike, flew in for this game. Celebrities are buying tickets. Justin Thomas was at the Duke UNC game. Mike, okay? And they were all there to see Coach K get completely humiliated. What an embarrassing way to go out at Cameron Indoor.
I mean, sometimes you win and sometimes you don't.
Yeah, it was an awkward one, of course. So everyone, these Duke fans are crying because it's the end of Coach K at Cameron Indoor. They're also crying because they just lost to UNC in their biggest rivalry of the season to end the regular season. And then after that, they all just have to awkwardly stand there because we've already planned a post-game ceremony for Coach K. He immediately walked out and said, by the way, guys, that was an embarrassment. I just want to apologize for that. So I appreciate him going off script in that moment, but nonetheless, a very strange and peculiar finish to the Coach K era at Duke.
It really was. It's unfortunate. But let's talk college hockey as well. That's college with a CAWLIDGE. I think that's how you spell it. College hockey.
Shout out our ladies this time too.
Lady Bobcats, Quinnipiac University women's hockey. One of the best teams in the nation. They are bound for the Frozen Four. Not really the Frozen Four.
Yes.
Unless they win a couple of games, but it's called the Frozen Four.
They're in it. They made it to the dance. That's what counts, right? Did. That's the first step.
They're dancing on ice. That's true. They've made it before. They've made it again now. And their chances look pretty good, I feel like, of winning a couple games right now.
This is exciting. Yeah. Shout out to Kelly Babstock, our past guest, who gave her team the great nickname, the Bob Kitties. That's how I like to refer to the female hockey team. They're absolutely crushing this year. So I had to shout out our ladies. And hopefully they can make a run just like I think the men will this year, too.
I think so indeed. But in the meantime, let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by Toasty Snacks, makers of Toasty Bites. Crunchy, delicious, shockingly good for you. A great snack on the go indeed. Promo code COL20 at toasty.com/COL. I'm going to lead the way, Mike, because I trashed McDonald's in recent weeks. You remember, I'm very offended by this land, air, sea sandwich where they're asking us to put a filet of fish patty inside a McChicken, inside of a burger. They really are asking us to do that. Okay, Mike. I don't know if you ventured out or seen this in public, but I've now actually seen advertising for the land, air, sea as well. Can you believe that?
I have seen very little about it, but as what happened when you told me about this a few weeks ago, my heart just went into palpitations just thinking of it.
Yes.
I can feel my blood pressure rising, my cholesterol going through the roof just from thinking about it. I haven't even seen a picture of it right now.
It's a call to cardiologist menu item for sure.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to extend an olive branch to McDonald's, because there is one other thing that I do see that they're promoting, which I can get on board with. And it is I'm not really even sure what they're calling it, but just that's the supersized breakfast sandwich. Mike, we're throwing hash browns in the breakfast sandwiches now. That's the new breakfast marketing technique from McDonald's. Now, I will say I find that much less offensive. I think it sounds like just a gigantic breakfast hash in between two pieces of bread. So I will try the hash brown filled breakfast sandwich. I'm not as offended by that as I am the land, air, sea.
You know, I do like McDonald's breakfast. I am a fan of the McGriddles. I do think the McGriddles are good.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I'm thinking a hash brown can't do too much damage to a wonderful sandwich like that. So I'll give that a try and report back. What was on your food docket this past week?
So this weekend, the wife made hamantaschen.
Oh, it's time to get schooled, isn't it? Jewish bacon going on here?
Sure. Jewish bacon. We're doing some more Jewish bacon pretty much. So hamantaschen is for Purim typically, which is coming up in the next week or so, I believe it is. So Purim is a Jewish holiday from the book of Esther, in which the Jewish people freed themselves from the Persian Empire. Something like that. I don't have a great, I'm not that. I'm not that much of a Jewish historian, but basically it's a cookie that's made in the shape of a three cornered hat. So it's three corners. It's usually then. So you make dough, you roll it out, you punch a circle, you fill it with something, and then you kind of crease it up. So you make it into a triangle. And we made s'mores hamantaschen. So it was filled with Nutella and little mini marshmallows and then baked and then dipped in chocolate and sprinkled with some graham cracker crumbs. And it's just as fantastic and superb as you think it is.
I love that. Always end with food indeed. Hit us up in the DMs if you want some of that goodness in your life too. That sounds like something I could definitely get on board with. S'mores hamantaschen. I think you're carving out a lane for yourself here with these you're putting these unique flavors on these Jewish recipes that are you got something here. Stick with this.
Maybe. We'll see. Okay. We'll see what's happening.
All right. That's a wrap on this week's Course of Life. Send off announcement time. Be sure to subscribe if you want to hear about the fact that I might be going to the freaking Masters. Yeah, that's right. All coming up next week on the Course of Life.